Because I was living over there at the time, and that's it was on the news. I heard him. It was so disgusting.
It's so disgusting. It's disgusting that you have all the usual folks in the national media, the Krauthammers and all these people, coming to supporting him, attacking the Obama, who is in this situation, has never had the support of Congress. As a matter of fact, just after Obama came into office, shortly after, before he was going to meet for the first time with Netanyahu, he got two letters, one from the Senate, signed by 76 members of the Senate, one over three-quarters of the Senate, another signed by three-quarters of the House, both of them telling him not to put any pressure on Netanyahu. And these letters were drafted by AIPAC, and the one for the House actually had AIPAC's logo on the PDF. And yet, the mainstream media, other than a blog in the Washington Post, was totally silent about this. And so, you know, were our friends in, you know, the Phyllis Bennis's and the Amy Goodman's. Our left alternative media will not challenge the lobby.
Yeah.
And we have to figure a way around that.
Well, I think Dennis Bernstein sometimes does. Amy Goodman doesn't, but I think Dennis Bernstein does. You do.
I do. As a matter of fact, by the way, in April, there's going to be a conference in New York, in Washington, D.C., at the Press Club, which I'll be speaking about my experiences with the Anti-Defamation League. And this is going to have a some really important guests, which I can't name at the time, who have not spoken at any of these conferences before. It's right now that the guest list is a secret. But you'll be happy to hear. I'll let you know when I can release it.
And all right. What is the date of that conference?
It's April 10th, a Friday, April 10th, in Washington, D.C. at the Press Club. And it's going to be called Israel Lobby, Is It Good for the United States?
And will that be online? Will people all the catch
it will
it
be, well, last time C-SPAN covered, we had a conference last year, all-day conference with a number of former CIA people like Ray McGovern and Phil Giraldi, myself, Phil Weiss was there from Mondo White, all-day conference, and C-SPAN 3 covered the whole thing. There was not a word in any American media, nothing on Democracy Now.
Yeah.
Nothing anywhere.
Yeah, and
C-SPAN
you had an,
did the job.
You had an awesome talk that I you sent me the link. I could watch it on YouTube.
But have you asked?
Right.
Have you asked KPFA to cover it?
Sorry?
There's times KPFA has covered things, but in the East Coast. Have you asked KPFA if they would cover this event?
KPFA, I very much doubt it. I will talk to Dennis ahead of time. He would be the only one who would do it.
Oh, no, Davey D, the Hard Knock
Davey
Radio.
D.
Yeah, they made two.
Davey D, maybe Davey D.
Right.
Because this is going to be really important, and it's a very interesting guest list, and hopefully C-SPAN will do the same as it did before. I mean, without C-SPAN, we would have no coverage of that. I spoke... subject in that event last year was, are there gatekeepers on the left?
Yep,
of course there are.
And so I talked about gatekeepers on the left of what I have been running into for years. I used to be invited to speak at a lot of Palestinian events until I started speaking about the lobby. And then pressure was put on Palestinian organizations.
Oh, no.
Not to invite me. I was called a loose cannon.
Jeez.
And so it's been pretty sordid stuff. You know, it's like if we can't speak about these issues on the left, where can we speak about them?
Yep. Exactly. But left, right,
right wing
left, right,
do
and
this.
Center,
right,
this,
yeah.
this information, left, right, or center, it doesn't matter if you consider
right.
yourself a leftist, a rightist, or whatever, this information has to be
right.
out there for
yep.
people to be informed.
Right.
But they're worried about, they're worried also about funding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Ramparts Magazine, which I used to take photographs for, I wrote one article for, when after the 67 war, Robert Scheer wrote an article critical of Israel, Ramparts nearly went out of business because of canceled Jewish subscriptions.
Yeah.
Lies of Our Times is probably the only left magazine I know that went out of business because Ed Herman, Professor Ed Herman, had me writing articles on the lobby and aid to Israel,
wow.
which was a no-no within the left circles. And then I got a call from Ed or email or something that they were out of money. They couldn't pay the small amount they were paying, and they went out of business. But all these other publications know better than to touch this third rail. And it's not just in the right wing and mainstream. It's also in the liberal left.
Yeah.
That's why The Nation will not touch this article,
yeah.
touch this subject, or does so very rarely and with qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
What about Black Agenda Report, Glenn Ford?
Well, but do you hear Black Agenda Report? You hear Glenn Ford or Margaret Kimberly or Bruce Dixon on Democracy Now? No.
No.
They're great.
Yeah.
They're
mm-hmm.
great, but they don't get the kind of support within the left that they should.
Yeah.
So we just need to make some calls and get some pressure on Amy Goodman to start.
There needs to be a lot of pressure on her.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Because the Black Agenda Report is I don't agree with everything that's on there, but I agree with most of it. And at least they're fearless.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
They don't look over their shoulder because, you know, they're funders.
Yeah. Well,
it's a real challenge. But this particular moment, we have to not pretend that this is business as usual in Washington. This is a crisis for Israel.
Yeah.
And it is a crisis for Israel-U.S. relations. And we have to, you know, support, let those members of Congress.
Right, thank them.
And I'm not into electoral politics, but
yeah.
it exists and it's important. When something happens like this, we have to really
right.
let those politicians yeah. know. Even Nancy Pelosi,
right.
who said she was in tears listening to Netanyahu because he was insulting American intelligence.
Right. Yeah.
For
yep.
Nancy Pelosi, who has said she's pledged her allegiance to Israel as much as anybody
right.
in Congress. I
yep.
think.
Oh, yeah.
Flyer out with a feature. But this is quite extraordinary.
Yes.
And it needs to be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
Not, you know, trying to offer just, you know, it's not significant at all. It is significant.
Yep.
Because, and we also have to keep Hillary from becoming the next presidential candidate.
Yeah, God, for sure. How do we do that?
No, and you see, then you have the problem. Emily's List is going to support her.
Of course,
she just made a speech on Emily's List.
Yeah.
We have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, we sure do.
But I'm glad your radio program, the subjects you deal with you should get wider coverage. You know, it's like but there's so few people doing it.
Yeah, that is true. But I'm lucky for Free Radio Santa Cruz that they give me
free reign.
The free reign.
That's great.
I can have whoever I want on. We can say whatever you want to say, and people who listen in the night of the show, they can listen to it. It's then up to me that if I succeed to get it uploaded to another website, because they don't have the space on the radio station anymore for archived shows. So I sometimes have problems with my computer to get shows uploaded.
We need to get Donna a new computer.
Yeah, mine are on For All.
Yeah, Radio For All. I used to be able to upload to Radio For All, but then in the recent past, whenever I tried to upload it before the show uploaded, it would crash. So recently I've been trying to upload to Mixcloud, and I've succeeded, I think, four times.
Yeah, it's sometimes I've had probably depends sometimes on the computer or your connection, but my shows I've been using radio for all for years now, and so all my programs I break them down. I do a 17-minute kind of summary,
mm-hmm.
not a summary but a commentary, and then I do an interview. Sometimes around the Middle East. It was last time week I interviewed Grant Smith of the Institute for Research Middle East Policy, who was one of the sponsors of the event in Washington with the Washington Report on the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an amazing response. Within no time at all, I got over 233 downloads.
Wow.
Wow.
Awesome.
But like this Wednesday, I'm going to interview Patrick Bond on the movement against corruption with the ANC in South Africa.
Wow. Well, I shouldn't do this on the air, but Jeffrey, send me stuff, emails about your show, and I'll promote it from my different email lists. You'll get more people to listen in.
Send it to me, because I'll just put it up on Google Plus.
Yeah, it streams at kzyx.org from 9 to 10, the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month.
Yeah, but send me an email. I'm not going to remember
that.
Yeah,
I will do that. Right, right.
Yeah, because Keelu sends me when she's going to air her TV show, Freedom is a Constant Struggle, on the...
Oh, right.
The television station in San Francisco. And I try to send that out to people so people can tune in if they want.
Yeah, I'll be her guest on March
19th. Oh,
cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So we have about two more minutes.
Yeah, Keelu is another treasure.
Oh, gosh, isn't she?
She is somebody who is wheelchair-bound. She is as much of an activist as anybody I know.
Yep.
And I've known Keelu now for years.
Yep. Yeah, she's another person who's been actively involved for decades. No topic is untouchable for her. She's been a supporter of human rights and justice for the prisoners, for so many of the political prisoners and prisoners.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it is Bathrop Spears Broadside, special guest Mike Boyd, and the unknown man whose voice you may or may not recognize. Stay tuned.
Brother, we're nothing alike. I'm driving my Hummer, you're riding your bike. If I were in your shoes, I know what I'd see. If I were in your shoes, I'd wanna be me. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. No how and no way, your troubles will never come darken my day. You're different, it's your fault, you're stuck in a ditch. You should have planned better like me and got rich. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. And if you want something, you'd better say please. It's best if you flatter obsequiously. I hear you much better if it's about me. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. Try to be just like me if you can. It's the song of the wealthy man. If you're out of money, well, I'm not to blame. Of course I am a winner, I made up the game. You should have planned better, it's easy to see. dogs are mine and the medium's too. So get up and move before I arrest you. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. Try to be just like me. It's amazing what big piles of money can do. I encounter agreement, whatever I say. And if they try to tax me, I faint dead away. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy man. Always right, never wrong. They're better than you. Better shod, dressed, connected, and well insured too. Money may not buy love, as the songs always say, but it buys politicians, and they're here to stay. It's the song, it's the song, it's the song of the wealthy men. Always right, never wrong. Try to be just like me if you can. It's the song of the wealthy man.
And that was Carol Denny, the song of the wealthy man from her album Unless, of Course, You Die, which I played before, but I liked it so much I played it again. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio with me, we have two guys who are going to be talking about a number of subjects. The first one, however, and the one that specifically Mike Boyd came in to talk about has to do with the Board of Supervisors' latest cannabis capers and their plans to finalize an ordinance that a lot of people don't like, I think Michael included, me, and I think the other, what's your name, sir? How are you identifying yourself in this particular discussion? We're going to call him Doesn't Matter, DM for short. So, Mike, what are your credentials? Why are you qualified to talk about this cannabis subject? How much research have you put into this? Let's start with, show us your papers. Approach the mic. You have to be about an inch away from the mic. So you got to really belly up to the mic there.
Okay.
There we go. That's probably, say something.
Something.
Not bad, but let's turn it up a little bit.
Okay. So, Mike Boyd, my suit. I'll show you my suit. On May 30th of last year, the Republican House of Representatives voted to pass a House resolution that basically defined medical marijuana under federal law as exempt from federal enforcement via the fact that they were saying no funds could be spent on federal enforcement enforcement against medical marijuana. Defined it as distinct from marijuana as a controlled substance under federal drug enforcement laws. So, in so doing, on June 10th of last year, the Board of Supervisors brought up this measure to go on the November ballot to put a tax of 18.25% on. Up to 18.25% on medical marijuana. And they Measure K,
it
was called. And at that time, I didn't know. But I went and I told them, hey, if you do this, I'm going to sue you. And, of course, they did it. And so I sued them on July 15th. That's my suit, or the paper. Okay? And I did that in the Superior Court. Now, after I did that, then we had an election in November. It turned out the city had a conspiracy going with the Board of Supervisors, and they went ahead and put the same measure, identical, in the city called Measure L. And it won by a landslide in both the city and the county elections. The difference being I got about 3% more by filing a ballot argument against the measure. And I wrote that argument. And basically in that argument I said, hey, I'm suing these guys for violating my federal civil rights under color of state law, which is 42 U.S.C. 1983 is the code section. It's the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1878. And it was created because they had a habit of lynching black judges and politicians in the South after the Civil War.
Policy that is not apparently dead. They're still shooting them down with some regularity, although they aren't judges
never
often.
Turn your back on a fucking pig.
Well, apparently I think they have their targets on black youth, to be exact.
Right, well, that's true. It'd be better to go after the judges, actually. All right, so I don't want to make any threats against any of our judicial officers at this time. Little as I may like them. Anyway, so wasn't there, Mike, let me ask you this. Was this Republican measure actually enforced, or did the Obama administration continue to harass people at a state level who are on those states where there is medical marijuana authorized?
Probably. I don't know. I think the Republicans and the Democrats are all rotten, if you're just
asking. Well, I'm looking for the facts, because if they continue to...
Well, let me finish telling the story, and I'll tell you what happened after that.
Well, I do want to hear, but...
Obama actually signed it into law on December 16th.
He did, but did he enforce it, is my question.
Well, did he enforce it, or did he not enforce it?
In other words, did the feds continue their older practice of selectively going after whatever distributors or collectives for medical marijuana that they felt
I haven't seen any evidence of that since December of
last year. Okay. Signed it into law. But between June and December, there may have been some continued...
Well, obviously, the government thinks that it wasn't work for you and me, so that's why they do stuff like
it
that.
It wasn't signed into law until December, in other words. In other words, it was passed in June, but it took 6 or 8 months for actually to be signed into law.
No, it became law as soon as it was signed. They created a public law, and they gave it a public law.
Number. Well, why are you saying it was signed in December? I'm sorry, I'm missing.
Well, it was, okay, so what happened is it went, and what happened is this was a different House resolution, is what they call it, okay? And what happened is they have this thing called the Omnibus Budget Act
of
2014, and they folded that in to that law, and then and actually Sam Farr and some Republican dude down in Southern California
were responsible for doing that.
Responsible for doing an amendment in the House, and then they put it on this omnibus thing. Okay, so
isn't the June thing or in the December thing?
This is the thing that he signed in December. Okay, so after they voted in May to make it the House resolution,
right.
Then they folded it into this House resolution 83 is the actual number they voted on,
mm-hmm.
And that was then approved by the Senate and signed into law by the governor.
So it didn't actually become a conflict, according to the theory you're using in your lawsuit, until it was signed into law, or was it a conflict the minute it was passed by the House?
So what happened is when it was signed into law, the basis of my suit is it was the preemption. The federal preemption question, which is what you're asking, is when did the federal preemption come in? Is in May. I'm arguing, and that's why I filed the lawsuit, in May of that year when the House did it, since they wrote the budget and they controlled all the money, they defined the line items in the budget, okay? And when they put the word medical in front of the word marijuana, they made their two distinct classes of marijuana. The illegal kind of marijuana... And of course,
your point is that you can't tax medicine, and therefore, if the Board of Supes and the City Council went ahead and did so anyway, they were engaging
right.
in a preemption. But my question is, it didn't actually become law until December, so you might say, well, until then they were okay, but have they since been taxing? Have they been collecting a tax?
Well, they had noticed, though. They had noticed when it passed.
Yeah. They got noticed when it passed.
They had noticed when it passed, but it hadn't actually passed and been signed.
Right, well, that's what they said in their argument and their response, okay?
Yeah.
But so then it did pass, okay? So then what I did is I went after
It was signed into law. I went and identified when I filed the suit, I put DOES on it, DOES 1 through 50, okay? And I identified my fictitious defendants. And the first ones I identified were the City Council of the City of Santa Cruz and the entire City Council individually.
I hope you didn't leave out the City Manager. I mean, he's our favorite guy.
I'll get to that later.
Right. But that's Martine Bernal wouldn't want to be left out.
So, and then I also named all those people that signed the ballot argument in favor of the measure
that
were a public employee of some sort because they had a pension and that meant they shouldn't put their name on something that taxed me, okay, because they got a direct benefit from it, you understand? So... I named all them, and I got, like, the assistant police chief in the city, Martinez or whatever his name is, and I got this Cal Fire chief, Halbert, okay, in the county one, because he put his on the county, and the former mayor, Byers.
Catherine Byers.
She put her name on it, so I named her. The treasurer, the county treasurer, Fred Keeley, he didn't put his name on as the county treasurer. He didn't even disclose to the voters in his ballot statement that he was a county employee. So it said he put down that he was the president of Semper Varian Fund, this so-called environmental group that gets its money from PG&E. So what I did is I named him and Semper Varian Fund. Okay, and they have their own lawyer now.
All these people have lawyers?
Oh, yeah. And then...
We should say you did this all without a lawyer yourself.
I had a fee waiver.
You're pro bono.
I'm on Medi-Cal. It's free to sue the government if you're poor.
Now, why is this? Mike, why is this important for low-income people? Talk about that for a moment.
Well, it's real important because you're poor, you're free.
That's right.
If you don't have nothing to lose, you got nothing to take, brother. That's as simple as I can tell you.
Yeah, but
you can't be afraid of justice. You got to stand up. You got to go in the library and you got to learn how to file the lawsuit and what it looks like. And you got to go on Google Scholar and look at the case law. They got all the case law there.
I catch the general point, but what about the specific lawsuit? Why is this specific lawsuit important for poor people?
Well, they're going to get their medicine for free if I win.
Otherwise,
this was over the taxes, though, wasn't it?
So,
no, because see, under SB 420, if you are on Medi-Cal, you're supposed to get a discount. Okay.
Oh, you want Medi-Cal to
now,
pay for
you? The way when you go to, and this is how I argued it in my ballot argument. Okay, is when I go to the dispensary, it's like going to the pharmacy. Okay,
right.
If I'm poor, I don't pay for my medicine; I get it free. If I can afford it, I pay a copay. And I think I should be the same when I go to my caregiver dispensary. It should be the same thing.
And what is the current situation when an individual does go to their dispensary in Santa Cruz County or city? What happens today?
You get a tax.
And how much of a tax do you get?
It's 7%. That's where they started it at.
So this tax, your lawsuit predates this whole controversy that is coming up at the Board of Supervisors and has actually been kind of brewing for the last few months about cutting back cultivation and other concerns. You'll be talking about that too, I take it.
Yeah. That's my dilemma here, okay, folks. And I hope some people that are listening call in on this because I don't really know what to do. I'm just a regular guy. Okay, now here's the issue.
Up against 50 lawyers.
That don't matter. Lawyers don't matter. I'm telling you, I've done this. I'm in the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
I have a case in the Supreme Court right now.
So you've successfully sued.
Without a lawyer.
Have you successfully sued at other times and won? Or are you a person who's hoping to win?
If he's in the Supreme Court, that's an achievement right there. If he gets to the Supreme Court.
I don't
didn't get to the Supreme Court with your Nazi salute, Robert.
I don't look at it that way. I look at, when I'm filing a suit, it ain't to win, it's to stay alive.
So, give me some examples of, how many past suits have you filed, Mike?
Oh, at least a dozen.
And have these mostly been, are they a variety of issues, or are they all kind of in a particular area?
They're in constitutional law, I would say.
And you say, from your answer, should I infer that you haven't specifically won any of these lawsuits, but you felt the struggle was important?
Well, I would say I won the one recently. I got a remand from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. I have a lawsuit that I filed in June of 2011 against the California Public Utility Commission and all the individual commissioners. You know, President Peavy, the guy that just quit under a cloud at the California Public Utility Commission, and they had 65,000 emails that were made public related to the San Bruno pipeline explosion. And all that's like all...
The basis of that lawsuit was...
Lawsuit for that was I have solar panels on my house, and it's another federal preemption thing. It's cut to the chase, but... And the solar panels, I don't get paid for my solar power by PG&E. I put them in 2001, not because I'm green, because I hate PG&E. And in any case, they never paid me. And then I got I'm a federal qualified facility, self-certified at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Well, when they wouldn't give me a contract and a payment, I went to the PUC and they wouldn't help me, so I sued them.
Now, again, why would they owe you money if you put in solar panels? I'm
You're feeding energy onto the grid?
Yeah, I'm putting energy in the grid. I oversized my solar system to be more than I...
And so it's generally the case that they are required to pay people, and they eventually did.
Yeah, under federal law,
and they did pay you because of this lawsuit.
No, they haven't paid me yet. I just got a remand. I lost at the district court. I appealed it, and then the appeals court sent it back to the district court. That's where
I'm at. Now, what did you appeal on?
I'm still alive.
You're fighting it.
I'm still alive. Right. My point is to be alive. I told you that.
Okay.
It doesn't matter whether you win or
alive. What grounds did you appeal on?
What did I win on?
What grounds did you use in your appeal?
One was this this federal law called Public Utility Regulatory Policy Act, and the other was the 42 U.S.C.
Okay, we're going to skip this stuff.
Free speech. That's basically the
issue. The issue that I think a lot of listeners are interested in, maybe, and I am interested in, is the current controversy at the Board of Supervisors. That there seems to be, according to the headlines in the Sentinel and testimony from concern of the Cannabis Alliance, I'm not quite sure if I have their name right.
Advocates Alliance.
Thank you. Cannabis Advocates Alliance, which meets every Wednesday night at the Loudoun Nelson Center. It's from 7 to 9. And, you know, there it seemed to be a... when I was there, they didn't kick me out for some reason, but apparently they did kick you out.
Yeah, well,
they didn't like, or they made a. Did they actually bar you from the room?
Well, no, the guy with the ponytail and the glasses, I can't remember his name.
Jason,
yeah, he walked out after I was walking out. He walked up to me. He basically said, "You're not welcome here. Don't ever come back again." And I said, "Dude, you put this in an ad in the paper, and it said it was a public meeting, so I came."
So what was it? Did you shit on the floor? I mean, what did you do that upset them?
I told them that they were a bunch of wimps and that they shouldn't be friends with the sheriff or the board of supervisors. Those people were going to screw them.
So let's take. First of all, of course,
and I was suing them, and I wanted them to help me in my lawsuit. I mentioned the word lawsuit, they all like. Coward, like a bunch of babies.
Now, my response if somebody were to try to evict me from a meeting is usually to get all excited and say, "Fuck off," which actually is probably wrong. It's best to sort of ignore them and go
bring the police
and
in.
Go and go back and you know and go. You know, it's best. You know, I think it's best to go about your business and, you know, proceed. But I, on the other hand, you know, I know how it feels when you're being excluded. I mean, I usually would say with one person who tells me that I'm excluded, I'll say, no, I'll take it back to the group. If they're going to attempt to ban someone, let them do it publicly, because I think that's becomes a public issue. And I don't think it's a good idea for that to happen. But before we get into that, I mean, I'm going to get into that. I think it's relevant in a more profound way, but what's the substance of the concerns that this alliance has? How are your concerns? How do they intersect? How do they conflict? Most important, what is the Board of Supervisors trying to do that will impact poor people who are trying to use medical marijuana and procure it or even to grow it?
Here's the controversy, Robert. I subsidize... I use three different caregiver dispensaries, one in Santa Cruz, two in the county, and but I subsidize that. I get my main source of medicine comes from Mendocino County, from an old collective that I've been part of for many years, and didn't really pay attention to it until all this thing came up with shutting down the grows. I noticed that I'm getting my medicine in these dispensaries at more than double what I'm getting it from Mendocino County. Okay, more than double. And the stuff I get from Mendocino County doesn't have any tax on it. And then they also, they have a tiered structure here in the dispensaries where they have, they have like, you have indica, you have sativa, and you have hybrid, okay? And then they have what they call top tier. And basically, used to be the price was maybe for an eighth, was between $30 and $50. Well, now it's between $40 and $55 for an eighth, okay? Now, I'm getting an eighth for $25, and it doesn't matter whether it's top shelf or not. I get all the same named strains from my Mendocino source that I get here. They're all called the same stuff, okay? Now, the other thing I noticed is the stuff that I get from Mendocino is a lot fresher than the stuff that I'm getting here in the dispensaries. The stuff here in the dispensaries is all dried out. And the other thing they're doing here in the dispensaries is they're having these so-called third parties testing them. Okay, and they're saying, you know, there's so much of this and so much of that in this medicine, right? And I look at it, and the problem is this stuff has a shelf life. So when they test it in the lab, by the time it gets to you, the patient, it's already changed. So they should be like, but the point is, the law doesn't say anything about these third party services. The state law doesn't say that they can even do that stuff. So I'm asking myself, why is this that they all have the same price and they're all tiering it the same way? And you know the answer is we have a cartel in this. We have a cartel in the county.
You call this the rice cartel. Why is that?
Well, because of this one grower that did talk to me. I should say a former grower, Brian Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he came up to me. And he, after the last Board of Supervisors meeting, he said he really liked what I said, and he started telling me about how he wouldn't go along with the rice cartel, so the cops came in and busted him, cut his grow down, and locked him up. I said, huh? This doesn't sound like...
Now, by the rice cartel, you're not sort of contrasting this with the wheat cartel or the corn cartel. You're talking about a particular individual, yeah?
Well, let's say a family. It's a family affair.
Are you talking about attorney Ben Rice and his family?
Yes.
And so you're saying that he is somehow involved in or influential in or controlling a marijuana cartel here in a price-fixing situation?
That's correct.
You're prepared to say that even if Mr. Rice decides to sue you for slander on this matter?
Sure, he can try to sue.
Truth is a defense.
Yeah, truth is defense.
Well, you know, I will invite him on the air to give his perspective on
this.
But
it's not just him himself, you know. It's also his wife, Tamara Rice, who works in the county council's office. At least that's her name right here on this letterhead.
Does she
work there? Sure. It's right here on the letterhead. And Ian, who's the individual who's running this third-party certification program.
Ian Rice?
Ian Rice, yes.
That's it. But that's the son?
Yes, son, yeah.
Well, you know, I like to name names, and I've got no objection to people naming names. I haven't contacted any of these people. I haven't researched them. Ben and I have had our ups and downs over the years. I wouldn't say he's one of my biggest fans, nor am I one of, I'm one of his biggest fans. But again, let me go back to the issue, which I'm going to have to kind of get past, because I got to talk about other things on this show.
So there's three. Let me tell you first what the difference is between the two ordinances the Board of Supervisors are voting. The two ordinances, the one.
Well, let's begin. Begin okay. With what ordinance are we facing next Tuesday or whenever it comes up next Tuesday, right?
There is an ordinance next. The second reading's next Tuesday.
And it could be voted into law
and
next Tuesday.
It could be voted into law. What, that would take effect 30 days after that.
And what will that ordinance do if it's voted into law?
It would ban the cultivation of medical marijuana in the county, with the exception of WOMAN Alliance.
WAM.
WAM, right.
No, and larger than a 10 by 10.
Everybody else is limited to 10 by 10.
Okay. So indoors in Zach Friend's district.
Okay, and is that accurate? Is our unknown man here?
I believe he's correct that District 2 has a certain exclusivity, let us say.
And what is that Zach Friend's district? What does it cover doing that?
Aptos and Watsonville. No. Oh, well, Aptos before Watson Freedom, you know, that area over there, Corralitos. So
in Santa Cruz, it's not going to be banned.
Doesn't affect.
So anybody can people can still grow outdoors if they want.
In the cities, they all can grow outdoors. Where
and can they grow in areas larger than 10 by 10 if this passes still in the city?
It doesn't affect the cities. So
it doesn't affect any. It only affects unincorporated territories of the county.
Okay, so. I guess I would ask, just as sort of peripherally, do you know of any grows in the city that are actually growing? You walked by and smelled marijuana growing, or, you know, do you have any? Because I haven't heard of it happening. I imagine it does.
I
mean,
I don't know.
People have individual plants, and they should. You know?
I don't know.
Right. This is coming up Tuesday for a final vote. How will this change existing law? What is the existing law now around this cultivation in the county?
Well, that's the problem. It's not really real specific for how much an area you can grow. It limits where you can grow. Like, you can't grow within 600 feet of a school and, you know, so things like that. But in any case, it's basically the same rules that apply to a dispensary apply to growing.
Which are what?
Well, you can't. There are certain places, certain areas where you can't have it, right? You can only grow in the right
does this mean,
area.
Mike, does this mean practically that there's very little area in the county where you're, at the moment, not allowed to grow? Are you allowed to grow virtually anywhere in the unincorporated area at the moment?
If you're in the ag zoning, sure.
Okay, now what? How much of that? How much of the county is zoned for growing? Do you know what percentage?
I would at least half, I would think.
So at least half the county right now is open for growing.
Sure.
And when this law passes, as it's likely to, you two are suggesting, there will be no places in the county it will be legal to grow other than by 10 by 10 grow, except for WHAM?
Yep.
That's
a special exemption.
Okay.
Whoa, that's
selective enforcement.
So, well, wait, let's get to
the
other option. So now let me tell you what the option was that was coming in that they changed last vote to this ban. Was they were going to have three...
this is an option that was brought to the supervisors a couple weeks ago, but which they then changed into the current
option
thing.
Option B.
The
originally option A.
Right.
Now, option A has become option B.
Okay.
And option A is...
So what they originally... What they voted not to do, but which you are now going to talk about for some reason, it's still important to you? Why are we talking about that?
No, it's important because this is what I think they're going to try and fall back on.
I see. So this is they may not vote on this on Tuesday.
They may go this...
They may go back to option B. So what is this option B?
Option B is there. You get three. The dispensaries can have three county-approved growers, okay, in the county, and they also talked about a third what's called a third-party certification,
which is what?
It's Ben Rice is, or the Rice Cartel is what I, as I, a.k.a. the Rice Cartel. Essentially, what I think is going on, in my suit, now this is a segue back to my suit. The basis of my suit is that the tax was illegal because they created a ruse called a cannabis business. And there is no definition of the word business in either Prop 215, the Compassionate Use Act, or SB 420, the amendment or the change. Basically, you can't go backwards from Prop 215, but you can make it better.
So let's clarify. Proposition 215 legalized medical marijuana broadly in the state of California in 1996. SB 420 in the early part of the 2000s.
2003.
Thank you. 2003 set up a sort of a procedure. That's where the medical marijuana cards came from. Banned it from, actually, right. Made it so you can't smoke marijuana anywhere in the city of Santa Cruz because you'd be within 1,000 feet of a park or a, you know, a children's playground. It's a way of... excluding a lot of, I know, marijuana use in areas. Although in San Francisco, I understand, there is a law that specifically, while it bans smoking of tobacco in public, it does not ban marijuana smoking in public. Interesting. So,
this is relevant because they were using this ruse of the word business, and that's what I'm saying. Well, you can't call it a business and then tax it. It's a collective. It's a co-op. Okay, that's what the law says. Okay, which is a nonprofit entity, so you can't tax a nonprofit anyways.
Exactly.
Okay. So, but in any case, be that as it may,
they need to return that money.
The point I'm trying to get to here is that the previous measure, they used this word business throughout it. They kept talking about they used the word a medical cannabis cultivation business is not and shall not become a permitted use or activity in the county for so long as this chapter remains in effect. A medical cannabis cultivation business shall have a limited immunity from enforcement remedies set forth, and blah, blah, blah. But the point is, I'm trying to make here, is the previous one used the word business. And my lawsuit's about them creating this ruse called a cannabis business. So I already won by the fact that they went to Plan A, where they took the word business off.
I see.
And now the question for your listeners that I'm placed, the perplexion is, what if the sheriff and the board of supervisors are right? What if they finally smarten up and realize the Rice cartel exists? And what it's doing to patients is hurting them, not helping them, because I can get my medicine for less than half. And in Mendocino County, we got thousands and thousands of growers up there. Okay, the board of supervisors talked about putting a grow ban up there, and all three supervisors that proposed it, they took out recall papers and it was dropped. Okay? And that's how they deal with it up there. And so they've got economies of scale. That's
well,
why the price.
Let me ask you, and let me
so
ask.
My question for your listeners is, which way do I go? Do I go for A or do I go for B? And I'm beginning to think I go down there and I say, hey, you guys are right. If you can clean out the cartel and bring in some good quality medicine here where we actually can control what's going on and get all these crooks out of here.
All the dispensary, there is a limited number of dispensaries in the county now. There's a limit to the number of dispensaries that are allowed. I know there's only one allowed in the city. There were two. I guess there's two. There's two in the city.
There's about half a dozen or more.
Is there a limit? Is there a moratorium on gun new dispensaries?
Delivery services. Yeah, just delivery services.
What do you mean? What are you talking? I'm sorry.
Delivery services.
Is there a moratorium on dispensaries and or delivery services?
Just delivery services. But I haven't seen the ordinance,
so we don't know. So the question is, again, my focus is on low-income people. What's best for them? What would actually help people who are poor? I've asked HUF members, that's the group I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, to check out their local dispensary and see what kind of provisions they have in practice for a low-income person getting medical marijuana, from particular dispensaries. I've gotten reports from a few, and they weren't very positive. There's some controversy inside the HUF group as to how generous or, how welcoming or accessible.
I haven't talked to any homeless people or anybody else that ever got any free medicine. Now, when I confronted the dispensary people that I knew, they said they told me that they gave free medicine to sick people.
But you've never masqueraded as a homeless person, come in and said, please, sir, can I have some marijuana, and seen what the actual situation is?
No,
we haven't done that yet.
It's all hearsay.
So if anybody knows, please call in 427-3772. And if you have an answer to Mike Boyd's question here, Mike has sued the city and county claiming marijuana is a medicine. You can't be taxed, and he's concerned about what should he do before the Board of Supervisors on Tuesday. Should he support one plan that
abolishes the growing in the county but allows me to import it from Mendocino?
Right. Or should he? Let's call that Plan B.
Plan A.
And now what about
Plan B, which is three rice cartel controlled dispensaries that have three rice controlled growers.
So you may give your thoughts on this if you understand this. I'm not entirely clear on the whole thing, but I have a sort of a vague understanding of it. 427-3772 is the call-in number. This will be coming up at the Board of Supervisors shortly after 9 o'clock on Tuesday. That's next week. So it is an issue that's a real one. I'm going to take a musical break. Then I'm going to ask the silent partner, sometimes not so silent, in the studio here to give his own experiences with the Cannabis, Activist Alliance, or whatever they're calling themselves, Advocates Alliance, so that has been meeting regularly. We did have Sherry, a homeless activist, who has herself was a grower, talking about this issue, attending their meetings. She apparently talked to you, Mike, and you poisoned her mind, and she decided to pay no more attention to this group or didn't like them or thought they were bad. I've invited this group repeatedly to come on the air, and they've declined to do so, but they haven't been hostile to me. They haven't ordered me out of the room. On the other hand, I haven't stood up and said, you're all a bunch of weasels and scumbags or gutless cowards or whatever. So I don't know. You know, we'll see. Let's take, a musical break, and I'll be back. 427-3772 is the call-in number. You're listening to Free Radio 101.3.
My boss greets me every bright morning. He does it to cheer me, I know. He doesn't look much like a baker, much like a baker, but his hands are all covered with dough. My boss has my very best interests. He keeps them right here in his heart. He knows I'm not good with my money, and he works hard to keep us apart. He works hard to keep us apart. He knows I'm no good with my money, and he works hard to keep us apart. My boss loves me just like a brother. He won't pay me much for my coal. He knows it is hard on my pocket, but he knows it is good for my soul. He knows it is good for my soul. He knows it is good for my soul. He knows it is hard on my pocket, but he knows it is good for my soul. My boss says he'll meet me in heaven, and that's where I'm getting my raise. But I just had a chat with the devil. Guess where he'll be spending his days? Guess where he'll be spending his days? Guess where he'll be spending his days? I just had a chat with the devil. Guess where he'll be spending his days? So let's drink a glass to our bosses. And apologies for their misfortune. We're taking back all of our wealth. We're taking back all of our wealth. We're taking back all of our wealth. Apologies for their misfortune. We're taking back all of our wealth.
And that was another one by Carol Denny from another album of hers called A Toast to the Union, and that was He Knows It Is Good for My Soul. I remind you, in the studio, we have two activists who are trying to decide, at least one of them is, how to advise the Board of Supervisors, which is tremulously awaiting his opinion next Tuesday as to whether they should ban marijuana one way or limit it a second way. It's all exciting. It all sounds pretty bad to me. But we have a comment or two from, what's your name again, sir?
Doesn't matter.
DM, doesn't matter. Go ahead, DM.
Oh, you want to hear about the Cannabis Advocates Alliance?
Yes, you
visit a couple of their meetings.
This is a Wednesday group. Who, first of all, who are they?
I'm not sure. It seems to be a lot of growers, I guess.
Okay, and how many of their meetings have you been to?
A couple.
And what kind of issues are they discussing? I understand they did not present an alternate proposal
to the
Board of Supes.
They had a steering committee that was working on one. Apparently they had one done, but somehow it didn't get to the Board of Supes. So, you know, maybe they were just too high that day. This is the obvious joke, but I don't know. I haven't had a good answer to that, really.
It seems peculiar. I mean, if there's so
exactly, yeah. You know, I'm a paranoid. I assume that it's a conspiracy. Someone got on there, you know, got in that steering committee that sabotaged it. But that's just me.
I don't know.
But yeah, it's like so. You know, I don't know what they're doing now. They're getting ready for a referendum because they expect this to pass, sail right through the second reading. And they're going to immediately go out and try and get a referendum, enough signatures. They'll be...
That's hard to do in the county.
Well, they're hiring professionals at $5 to $8 a signature.
Wow. Interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. These people have money. They've raised...
That's a question I didn't raise with Mike, which is, now we get your thoughts on this, DM. What are these people representative... of collectives, or are they a bunch of profiteers who are essentially using a collective cover? This is the concern of some long-time activists.
I don't really know, because you know, I just hear comments. I only got a couple of meetings. I don't know the backgrounds of all these people, but it seems more like a lot of growers, because that's who's really being hit by this, are the growers.
Growers who are...
They have the most skin in the game.
Who are patient-oriented, or growers who are... trying to sell marijuana for profit under the the illusion of a cover of a nonprofit. What's your sense?
It's not mine to say, really.
You don't know.
I don't know either. Things are true, right? Right, because they are making a profit and they are doing it for patients. So
let's ask Mike.
I don't care anyways. Yeah. I mean, they have the right to do whatever they want with their land.
I think it's interesting to notice what's really going on, though. And I'd like to see. I think the whole medical marijuana thing is bullshit. There should be, it should be criminalized.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of patients there. It's a different, and I don't even think there's a lot of dispensary owners, although I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Have the dispensaries taken a position on this, Mike?
Again, that doesn't affect them directly yet, right? Because they're not actually doing the grows for the most part.
Right, but it would impact who they could get marijuana from,
yeah,
for
that's,
example.
This, well, that's again, yeah. Who knows what? Maybe they'll get marijuana from somewhere else.
Maybe
from
we can get more on this next by Sunday.
So they're less concerned. But a lot of people are going to lose money who bought property. In fact, I know someone in real estate that told me three deals that have dropped out of escrow since the first reading of this ordinance. So it will cause a drop in sales of vacant lots.
There's also some hype you see it in the Sentinel, and it's a figure that's repeated. Well, there the number of 84 of illegal grows has skyrocketed from 84 to 142 or something. I think that doesn't seem like a skyrocketing. Again, it depends on how big they are, what really negative impact they've had.
And again, I mean, what exactly
is a problem in the community, or the environment? The water is being despoiled. Are any of these concerns, in your view, the view of the two of you, true? Are they relevant?
I think they're true. I don't for a minute deny that those impacts are occurring to certain individuals in our county. But my question is, okay, if you're if you're concerned about the smell and stuff, what about the methyl bromide that they spread over all the strawberry fields down in Watsonville and all the houses that are right next to that? And they complained. In fact, I think there was some litigation around the exposure of people in our county to methyl bromide from the strawberry fields.
Right.
You want to talk? talk about smell. This stuff will kill you. Now, why are they concerned about the smell of someone growing marijuana when they're not concerned about
Well, now, just a moment.
It comes down to money.
Now, Mr. Marijuana lover, what about the crime problem? Now, what about that?
Let's talk about crime. In Fresno County, they abolished growing of marijuana. And you know what happened? It went underground. And they did it because one guy got shot. In one of the grow places, a guy got shot. They said, "Oh, we can't allow this. We're going to have to ban marijuana growing." And they did in that Fresno County. And you know what happened? The number of marijuana-related fatalities skyrocketed because people went underground, started growing this shit in their house, and then the mafia would show up and kill them to take their medicine away. And you want to do something about it?
I gotcha. Has there been any change in Fresno? You know, are they still in the same situation?
Well, Fresno's a little backwards.
I know, but are they? You haven't been following the situation in Fresno, I take it. You don't know what their current status is.
I don't know what their current status is. No.
Okay, I'm curious.
But I do know that they had it, and it had some major repercussions for people that were growing. You know, it became hazardous to your health.
Well, what I'm going to do now is take a complete shift, that's correct, to another subject, a protest that's happening up in Berkeley, I think.
Breaking news.
Or broken news, as the case may be. We'll see what the story is. I'm going to try to contact Sally Heineman, who's doing a ritual vigil along with other people. If I can get this number right here. Let's see if we can do this properly. Okay. This is happening at the BART station up in... This is happening at the BART station up in Berkeley. And... I just can't do that. And let's see if we can get a hold of her. I also was contacted today by... an activist who's a disabled activist up there who's also a part of this protest. It's a day-long sleep-in, which I'm having trouble reaching, against the anti-homeless laws that have been proposed in Berkeley to, essentially at the merchant behest. I played some of the discussion of those laws, the protests against those laws, poetry and angry comments about the laws. Yeah, let's see if we can get a hold of somebody at this protest. I'll give her a ring and see if she's going to answer. And who knows? I did talk to Sally earlier briefly, and she said she was going to give us a call. And I warned her that if she didn't, I would call her. So she has been warned. We'll see if we can get a hold of her. And maybe not. Maybe she's off in the... down there at the BART station. And if you're listening to this broadcast and you're in Berkeley, go check out the BART scene, and maybe you can let us know what's up. It looks like
I'm
going to answering machine here.
We're busy creating beautiful works of art right now.
And this actually...
If you'd like to leave a message, please do
this
so.
This is a...
thanks for calling.
An art group, a youth spirit at work in art that is actually sponsoring this. So, Sally, this is Robert Norris at Free Radio Santa Cruz down here in Santa Cruz, hoping you or someone from the vigil will give a call in. The number here is 831-427-3772, if you can give us a call, and we can perhaps hear how it's going. And maybe that'll happen. So, not having been able to reach her, I may try a couple of other folks. Let's see here. Well, and I don't know. Let's turn to Santa Cruz, since we can't get through to Berkeley. Yesterday, I think it was yesterday, I was walking down Pacific Avenue. I just parked my car, and I was told that there was an incident happening at Walnut and Pacific, and I decided to go over and investigate, and this is what I found.
There's another personal entry.
down or...
Of course, I got to get the right entry here before we actually reach that. I thought I'd had it, but don't go away. This is professional radio at its best, folks. So let's try again.
So it is Pacific and Walnut at about 5 or 10 after 3. A first alarm security guard. It's like two first alarm security guards.
Thank you. I'm so glad you showed up.
Hey, what's up?
Okay, so they say that I've been here longer than an hour. Fine.
Right.
Okay? I pulled my dog away from the hospitality lady because she was calling my service animal. Then the two gentlemen, the other blueberry that's standing over here, the other first alarmer,
I saw him.
Came over here and started harassing me and hovering over me. I told them that they would have to wait until my husband got here to pack up his rocks and stones because I'm not going to mess up his stuff. This is his art. Now that
just to give you a little background, this is a woman sitting on the sidewalk in one of those little sort of encapsulated boxes that are outlined on the sidewalk where it is there's free speech-ish type zones where she's allowed to do it, but only if after an hour, this is my interpretation of the display device law, after an hour, if she's told to move, she moves along. If she doesn't move along, then she's subject to a citation. Well, this became a point of controversy as this discussion developed. As when I arrived, there was a first alarm security guard and a CSO, that's a community service officer, which is a police officer of the SCPD in a kind of a lighter blue outfit. And there was another first alarm security guard across the street watching from the corner. And this is a relatively new place since the Lane Comstock ordinances passed some months ago. Previously, you were not allowed to be within 14 feet of an intersection. Now, this special zone is a place where you can be for an hour. It's right outside of a silver shop on Walnut, a couple storefronts away from the Walnut Avenue Cafe, for those who know that landmark. She was glad to see me, this woman. The guy who alerted me to this told me that she was being harassed, that I should go over and take a look, and I did. And I brought with me this sometimes helpful and sometimes functional audio device. And she was, as I said, seated on the sidewalk. Her husband, as she described the other individual who finally showed up, had a sort of a display of jewelry and rocks out, and she also had her dog with her. And that's the scene and the setting for what transpires.
They've been hovering over me. They've called an officer to cite me a ticket. You sure can. Thank you so much, sweetheart. And
at this point, a woman came up and gave her some money.
Now I'm getting harassed and told that I'm getting a ticket because I haven't moved fast enough and that a store called and complained that me and my husband have been sitting here longer than an hour. It all started, though, when they came up, they said that I had to move. They didn't even give me a chance to respond when she starts freaking messing with my dog, calling my dog to her. Don't call my service animal. That's exactly what I told her and pulled my animal away from her. Now, I'm waiting on my husband. He just went to go get us food. These two have been harassing me for the last 20 minutes.
You're talking about the first alarm?
Yes,
security.
The first alarm guys have been harassing me for the past 20 minutes, hovering over me when there was no other female officer over here. I am a woman by herself with her puppy.
Name of your puppy?
Sparks.
Your name?
Trista.
Do you know what's the name of the officers involved?
No, because his name tag's covered up. Name tag's covered up.
Ask him his name.
What's your name, sir? Exactly.
So he's declining to give his name. You do have Officer 433 here who can be called to testify as to his name, I suppose.
Yes, and you know what? Now that I'm getting the citation, I will be in court.
The officer who refused to give his name was a first alarm security guard. The other officer with him did have his tag available. That was the CSO. And again, we've been getting a lot of complaints. Huff has, a group I work with, about kind of first alarm security guards throwing their weight around. And indeed, tomorrow at 9:30, we'll be in front of the library keeping an eye on the security guards who patrol the library area and providing some coffee and some edibles. I'm not quite sure what the edibles are going to be. I think this hot dogs and brownies is often what pushback Pat Colby provides with her Cafe Huff. And you're invited to come on down, those of you who are interested in this issue, those of you who want to talk with some homeless folks. We're also going to be picking up accounts of different problems that occur throughout the city in terms of discrimination and harassment. And we'll be taking people's tickets, particularly specifically for sleep deprivation, in order to file claims against the city and small claims court for sleep deprivation, which is some regard, and I myself actually do regard it as perhaps an unlikely of success in the immediate future. But in perhaps in the same way that Mike Boyd is proceeding, the idea is to raise the issue and to let the wrongdoers, to use President Bush's words, know that they are under not only under observation, they have to come into court to justify themselves. And this is the idea. So we're going to be doing that. We're also looking to see if people are getting stay-away orders, which is another issue that has not come up so much because the city, as far as I know, has not used stay-away orders for longer than a day. These are the stay-away orders, not ones provided by the court, but the ones that the police officers, of their own initiative, whenever they feel like it, if they are writing you an infraction ticket, are allowed under the city council's new law to give out, and a relatively unique Santa Cruz ordinance that they've passed. But let's get back to Trista, her puppy Sparks, the unknown first alarm security guard, and the other officer, and the number of police officers will shortly grow.
And I will hire a freaking attorney. I'll find somebody who will do it for me for free because I am homeless. I am on the streets. I also asked for a sergeant. Is he coming? Okay. Because I'm not dealing with a rookie.
So as I understand it, you're willing to move. You're just waiting for the person who's to pick it up.
Yes, I'm with my husband who just came here.
Okay, so the law states you can be here for as long as you want until such time as you are told you have to move.
Exactly.
You understand that, officer? You understand that, correct? Officer Yoon, are you going to give me the courtesy of a response or not? Harassment happening over here.
So what happened was I asked Officer Yoon for a response as to whether his understanding of the law was that you can stay as long as you want until someone requests that you move. And that actually is the law, as I understand it. That is to say, it does not require you yourself to time yourself and leave. Now, when Sergeant Bush arrived, he took a different perspective on that, and I will be reading the text of the law for you listeners to make up your own mind as to what the situation is. There's also a third perspective presented by another regular downtown, the individual who drew my attention to this whole matter, who does a regular performance art activity himself downtown. His belief is that if you, once you're warned about leaving, you have an hour before you have to leave. That actually was the procedure under the old street performers voluntary guidelines, which is not a law, but an understanding among street performers. I don't think that's currently the case, but apparently he tells me he was so advised by a couple of sergeants some years back, Harms and Flippo, who have moved on to better things or worse things, as the case may be. In any case, let's get back to the scene at Walnut and Pacific. At this point, Officer Yoon apparently called his superior. Although, if she was accurate, and I think I often think people exaggerate these things, or they're prone to when they're under this kind of pressure. But apparently this had been going on for a period of time before the street performer who advised me of the incident came over and said, get over there, you know, there's something going on, you should keep an eye on. They want you to either monitor it or record it or, you know, intervene in some way.
We have another squad car arriving to harass a homeless woman. We have two security guards and now two police officers, including a sergeant, to harass a woman who has no money.
And this is Sergeant Bush, who just arrived. And I believe the police officer from across the street or another had arrived. The first alarm security guard, a second one, had arrived as well. I began raising my voice only when I did not get a civil response from this police officer. And it became clear to me that what's needed here was the public to be advised of what was happening. And so that's what I often do when this kind of thing happens and becomes quite evident what's going on.
A $350 citation.
And there's a problem with the recording, but don't go away. I'm going to have to find that here. Hang on. Let's see if we can find our spot.
I understand that you're willing to move. You're just waiting for the person who's to pick it up.
Yes, my husband who just came here.
Okay, so the law states you can be here for as long as you want until such time as you are told you have to move.
Exactly.
You understand that, officer? You understand that, correct? Officer Yoon, are you going to give me the courtesy of a response or not? Harassment happening over here. We have another squad car arriving to harass a homeless woman. We have two security guards and now two police officers, including a sergeant, to harass a woman who has no money, give her a $350 citation for not moving this instantly when she was waiting for this man to show up.
My husband.
That's the account I'm getting from her. This officer declines to respond to a question. This security guard declines to present his ID. His badge number is... I can't read it. Can you tell me your badge number?
I can't hear.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sure. Let me check your badge number.
Please step back, sir.
737. Oh, step away from me if you don't mind. Are you going to give your name? Aren't you required to have your label and your tag out? You're not? Really? Okay, well, that's... Your supervisor's name is? You refuse to say your supervisor's name.
I can't answer any of your questions.
You don't. Okay. Member of the public who you're supposed to be serving, you're not giving your name. You're not giving your... Yes, you are employed, however, by the Merchant Association and by the city. You have a responsibility here.
Thank you
for what? So he's declining... I believe he's declining to give his name here, folks.
I told him that I was going to...
So he's...
They said that they don't know if their job's going to get done unless they stay.
And we have Sergeant Bush here. Sergeant, they're willing to move. They just had to come back in order for this man to pick up his stuff. So we have a community service officer and Sergeant Bush.
I have no problem moving,
sir. Okay, what's the problem?
The fact that they hovered over me while my husband was gone, told me that I was going to get a citation no matter what anyways because I didn't move.
Uh-huh.
And then I told him I had to wait for him to get back. That's a lot of precious jewels and gems and everything else. Okay. I can't carry everything.
Okay.
That's all I told him. And then it was, oh, well, you're not packing up fast enough. You're getting a citation. I'm calling him right now.
Okay.
So I told him, call him.
All right. Well, they're not going to give you a citation today, but if you guys should pack up, move the location, just know you got to move every hour, okay?
And I do know that.
Well, you didn't because you've been here all day.
No, I haven't, sir.
No, we haven't been here all day.
You've been here more than an hour?
I don't know.
If it has been, it's maybe 15 minutes.
It doesn't matter. They have to be warned at an hour. You know that's the law, Sergeant, if you don't. I actually have the law right here with me. I'll show it. I'll read it. You know, it doesn't matter what the law is, Sergeant Bush. Come, come.
It doesn't matter because I'll give these people a ticket on your behalf.
So at this point, apparently, as I reached in my pocket to get the law, the tape went off or the audio went off. But what then transpired was a rather clumsy dialogue between myself and Sergeant Bush, where I read him the text of the law in a sort of a nervous, fumbling way because I was surrounded by guys in blue with guns and badges and that sort of thing. What it reads is this is a law that's called. Well, it's 5.43000, and the actual section is prohibited locations 5.43.020. No person shall be cited under this section unless he or she has first been notified by a police officer or the officer or downtown host that he or she is in violation of the prohibition in this section and thereafter continues the violation. Now, what I understand that to mean is the cop comes up after an hour and says, you've been here for an hour, you're violating the prohibition now, you have to move. And if the person then refuses to move, which they didn't, and they didn't get a ticket, I want to point out, Sergeant Bush, although he said he threatened to give them a ticket because I was intervening. And I said, why don't you give me a ticket instead? And he didn't want to do that either because obviously I didn't do anything that deserved a ticket. But... He insisted that a warning to a person 2 or 3 days in the past would suffice for him to give a ticket at this situation. I don't read it that way. I read it as if you continue a violation after you're advised you are violating the law, then and refuse to move, then you get a ticket. That's what I've always understood is the law. Now, apparently the police department is adopting a different, at least Sergeant Bush, who's a downtown sergeant, for at least one of the shifts, is adopting a different perspective. And that's very interesting. In any case, most of what the police do downtown is a form of bullying rather than ticketing. They would prefer not. They write out a lot of tickets and show up in court. It takes up manpower and so forth. And in fact, I think we should resume our practice, which some of us did a decade ago, of the take me to a magistrate approach, which some listeners, probably very few, may be aware of. It's provided for or was in both in the California Code and in the police department's general orders, the Santa Cruz Police Department's general orders, that if the courts are in session, you may demand of an officer that she or he take you to a judge to determine if there's probable cause for the infraction. And that was actually put on the books by activist Richard Quigley years ago, who was a helmet activist. He believed in riding around on a motorcycle without his helmet, or sometimes he might wear a helmet. His helmet was a cap. He wore a baseball cap because he felt it got even better visibility. And he was quite a, you know, like yourself, Mike Boyd here, who's still in the studio with us. He was, you know, he would file legal concerns, and he was particularly outspoken in courts, although very, very heavy on, probably too heavy for my feeling, on the respect for judges and sheriffs generally. But he felt, you know, he had a lot of respect for individual sheriffs, but very little for the head sheriff, which I had a lot of regard for there. Anyway, I'm sorry I didn't get more of this, but the ultimate outcome was they didn't get a ticket, though they were going to, before the intervention of a third party. It doesn't have to be me, it can be you. If you see something like this happening, draw a crowd over to observe what's going on. Video is vital. As people who have been watching Democracy Now! Recently or reading the newspapers know, the murders by police that have been happening across the country, when they're put on video, are suddenly very, very embarrassing to the authorities. First of all, they're embarrassing because the liberals couldn't give a shit at some level, but the people who are on the streets who face this kind of crap and see it, and then see it being ignored, come out in massive numbers and start protesting. And there's concern that they might start rioting, which might not be such a bad idea, actually. But in fact, you know, they're protesting. And that, you know, it's actually going to be happening next week in Berkeley. There's a protest slated for next Tuesday. It's Police Accountability Day. I'll be talking, I think, more about that. And we may be doing one here either on Tuesday or on Wednesday. I think we talked about that at the Huff meeting. And
Robert, on that, you were mentioning the infraction, and you were reading it, and your interpretation of that. What I heard in there is that really all you have to do is intend to leave the location, because my understanding of compliance with the law is different from yours. You don't have to comply with the law. You have to have compliance, or what's called a schedule for compliance. Civil law, you don't, it's like, how do you think these big polluters get away with polluting? Okay, is they have upset at the refinery up in Richmond, okay, and there's a big fire and all this stuff. Well, what they do is they go in and they go to the court and they say, well, here's our plan. We're going to do this and this by then and then.
But I believe that's civil stuff. I don't know about criminal stuff.
Well, no, yeah. This isn't criminal.
This is criminal. These are infractions are concerned.
Yeah. Are
they're considered criminal in courts. I mean, you can't go to jail, but you can be you know, fined. You can be forced to do community service.
What I heard the lady saying was that she was planning on moving.
Right.
And as long as she kept saying, I'm planning on moving, I think she's in compliance with the law. That's what I'm saying.
I see. Interesting. Well, obviously, the police didn't agree with you, Miss. But, you know, I hear you. I hear what you're saying. Let's hear some more from the streets while we still have time. There's not a lot of... I'm always running out of time on this show. So let's see what... See what we got here. Let's go to the Red Church and listen to some interviews there.
The Red Church on the 6th of April, talking with...
Bar Nation.
Bar, what do you got?
Well, I went on this really cool trail with a couple of cool friends, wilderness stuff. And it's sort of like the Rangers can never find you. And so we're going to move there and live there forever. Thank you, Rangers.
Thank you, Bar.
You pushed us out into it.
You're here. Thank you.
And you have something to say.
Just say no to the Bearcat.
What's your name?
This is Phoenix.
Thank you, Phoenix. Well, they said yes, so I'm afraid you're out of luck.
I'm terrified of the militarization of the police, which seems to be supported by the federal government. I'm very afraid, and this should not be happening in our country.
Not to mention the local government. Thank you.
So, Michael is threatening to leave the studio because of some kind of spousal obligation of some kind, which we aren't going to be going into.
That's the right way to put it.
Yes. So Mike, Mike, we've been listening. You know, he wants to be late for supper there. Mike, do you any place you can be contacted, or any, if you want to get in touch with you to be supportive of your lawsuit, donate $50,000, give you a back rub, I don't know, whatever.
A back rub would be good, too.
Yeah, there
you go. I don't know. You might have to sign a waiver.
Well, no, as long as you don't waver in what you're doing. So is there a contact information, or do you want me to...
I'll give you my email. It's Michael Boyd, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-B-O-Y-D, at sbcglobal.net. That's SBC is for Sam Baker and Charlie.
So that's Michael Boyd at sbcglobal.net. If you want to get in touch with Michael about this issue, or you can go down to the Board of Supervisors on Tuesday and see the final fireworks, or the final snuffing of the fireworks, as we saw with the Bearcat situation, the armored personnel vehicle at the City Council, which is now coming to Santa Cruz and perhaps to a neighborhood near you. You never can tell.
But no parades.
But, you know, I might not show because, you know, maybe the sheriff will call me up and say he listened to your show and he agrees with me that there's a problem with this cartel, and if I'll go along with his plan, he'll set up something good for the poor people of this county and actually do something for us. I mean, stranger things have happened. Who knows? Maybe they'll settle before then.
We'll see if the sheriff does anything of the kind. I'd be very surprised if he does. Meanwhile, back at the Red Church, we have the following. Unless, before we get back to the Red Church, DM, do you have any reports yourself from the street? Any thoughts about any things we've been talking about that you want to pass on? I don't know if you...
Medical marijuana.
We just listened to an incident on the street involving abusive and absurd enforcement of an absurd downtown ordinance.
Obviously, from a legal point of view, I mean, she was willing to leave, but it was her husband. It was really her husband's rocks were the ones who were violating the law.
So they should have arrested the rocks.
You think? Arrested.
Well, next time, perhaps maybe they would. They had some pet rocks. Are they involved in any?
I wonder if she just stepped outside the blue box, would she have been okay then?
The blue box. Yes, actually, these brackets, the blue brackets, actually, yeah, they don't want to have a full box outline. That would look a little too weird. Instead, they have these little brackets on the sidewalk here and there.
Well, you know, that's something Huff has wanted them to do for a long time, to just identify with these areas, because there's always a mystery to a lot of people. Where the fuck can I hear?
Maybe Huff has. I haven't. I don't.
We talked about it a few times.
Well, I don't. I think the areas are identified by the fact that the squares are 2 feet, you know, on Pacific Avenue, and that does tell you. I mean, you may have to bring. You don't even have to bring a tape measure with you. You just have to count the squares.
You're good at it, Robert. You're an expert. I mean,
there's so little space left downtown for people to sit down or.
You know, they dropped just, 80% or something.
It's more than that. I mean, as I said, when Doc Mike and I, who's just entered the studio a few minutes ago, walked up and down Pacific Avenue trying to figure out what space was actually available. You remember, Free, you were some of that. That was last year. We found it was very little, and now it's even less because you can't sit, unless you're engaging in some kind of performance, and rest inside one of these zones. I mean, so even the air...
You used to be able to just sit. Now you can't just sit.
Well, you can if you're 14 feet from everything and outside all these zones.
Oh, interesting.
Well, let's put it this way. That's not in the law, but it seems to me that is, in fact, the law. That's my sense of it. So it's really... they're squeezing the vise tighter and tighter. I mean, you look like you want to say something, Mike.
I had an idea. Why don't we get those little corner brackets ourselves and put them down in different places that we think there's enough space for a performer or whatever, so we can fill in the blanks, and we can keep doing that. We can keep doing that and confuse the whole rigmarole, okay? That's my idea.
Thank you. Thank you, Doc. Thank you, Doc Mike. Of course, that would mean something if anybody was actually willing to sit there and perform in those spaces, and that would be
now,
risking.
What does perform mean, really? That, isn't that a subjective content?
It is. It is.
Non-content neutral type
right.
of
definition? Right. I mean, it would have to... But performance is also a free speech space, so as long
you're
as...
You're sleeping, you're performing protests, too. Right?
Now, that's interesting. In Berkeley, that has been the basis why the police, according to the activists there who have been doing this, have not removed the encampment in front of the post office, which has been there since November, mainly to protect the historic building, which I think some developers want to remove.
Because they, First Amendment?
They very intentionally do not call themselves an encampment. They call themselves a protest. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether this is reflected in Berkeley law or by the Berkeley Police Department's policies, but that's what they told me. So that's interesting. Here in Santa Cruz, it actually makes very little difference to the police department. I recall 20 years ago, on the 4th of July in 1994, two activists set up a protest porta potty downtown because there were no bathrooms.
Just as, 24 hours.
Well, they tried to, but they were arrested because there is a provision of the law which makes it illegal to have anything on the sidewalk after dark which is obstructive. Of course, I suppose that doesn't include the freestanding signs that are always illegal, the commercial signs that the merchant businesses put up.
You're part of the fascist cartel.
You know, and that's part of this dialogue that I had both with Sergeant Bush and with the officers there and with a couple of merchants who came out. There were a couple of people who came out who denounced me as a troublemaker and as a loudmouth. Certainly it was loud.
Someone who twists people's words.
And that didn't come up.
Okay.
And somebody came out of the silver shop and he was saying, you know, that... you know, essentially acknowledging that they shouldn't be on the sidewalk. And he didn't... He sort of acknowledged that he had been the one who...
Who ratted him out.
It wasn't really entirely clear, and I also interviewed another person who was supportive of the person's right to be there and who liked what I was doing in terms of amplifying that support.
Mm-hmm. Well, you turned it into a protest and a First Amendment activity then, right? You converted it into something that could last there longer than when they tell you to leave.
Well, I think it's really, perhaps so, but I think it's really important that we stopped tourists, and it was...
That's what it is. They don't like that. If you mess with the tourists, they just, let's just get it ended.
Well, I'm not aware that the tourists were very sympathetic in this. I think they regarded it as some kind of, bizarre Santa Cruz spectacle.
That's Santa Cruz.
You know, some old guy ranting and raving about the police, So I suppose that's how they may have viewed it. I'm really sorry we didn't get the rest of this interview because it was very interesting and there was a lot of... Bush actually was quite successful in tongue-tying me at a number of points, Sergeant Bush.
Oh, he twisted your words.
Well, he was trying to distract me from what I was doing, which is what police will often try to do. You know, say, oh, come on now, Robert. He wanted to shake my hand, for example, when we left, and I said, not this time, Sergeant Bush. You know, this is what he tried to do. He did this also, I believe, when he... Sergeant Bush is the sergeant who's the sergeant-at-arms at City Council. He's actually arrested me falsely for putting a tape recorder, recording the council meeting from the position that then-Mayor Robinson didn't want recorded from, which was the place I had always recorded it from, which is on the banister right there in front of the City Council area.
That's right. Yeah,
and when I replaced it, he at Lynn Robinson's behest, first he removed and then he told me to have me arrested. And I said, well... And he did arrest me.
Yeah, I remember. I saw you afterwards, I think, and you were quite excited about it.
And I tried to have him issue an arrest citation to Lynn Robinson for a false police report because she claimed I was disrupting the meeting. In fact, I was doing nothing of the kind. And this issue is, and we have talked about it endlessly.
It's almost a distraction, right? They're trying to throw you
onto your
tape recorder rather than haranguing him.
I did file a claim with the city. The claim was denied, and I did talk about taking it to small claims court. In fact, I threatened to do that publicly to the mayor, former mayor, Lynn Robinson, and may still accept that it's, I don't get fee waivers for doing this. I got to pay for it, and it may be worth doing just to take the mayor into court to justify what she's doing, which is, in essence...
Well, if you win, Robert, you can sue for your costs and get that money back.
I know, I can. That's about as likely as snow in June,
Yeah, well, the thing is, they'll drag it out forever like they did in
the problem with that case, and we're talking about whether a person can record from the place they've always recorded, if the council decides that's... a violation of decorum is they have wide discretion in setting decorum rules. On the other hand, there is a First Amendment which says, and I pointed out that trying to record city council meetings from different positions can be very difficult, particularly since their law says, their rule says, their decorum rule says, unattended recorders or devices are not allowed. So you can't go out and go to the bathroom and leave your machine on,
you want a complete
and
record.
So forth. But they have made an exception to that, so now there's a part of the room where you're allowed to do that over by the speakers, and you can plug into the speakers.
But then it's all echoey.
But the problem with that is that you are doing a recording of the the sound quality can be worse, but even if it isn't worse, your recording is dependent upon their sound equipment working, and that has happened repeatedly, failed at least at different points. And also, it can be turned off.
Right,
and has been.
In order for them to screw you like this, there has to be a constitutionally adequate alternative for you, and there is none. You can't count on their recordings on their website, because we saw when we shut them down over the Bearcat, that recording never got up there.
And still isn't up there, I might add.
Of course, it's embarrassing to them. They don't want it up there.
But they don't. You know, again, when we talk about this issue, perhaps at too great a length, because unless we're going to do something about it, we're a bunch of whiners on this issue.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, for your legal case, that is an argument. At least with your recorder, you have some control that you're...
Well, when I speak...
trust the city council.
When I spoke with attorney Paul Cook, he told me that what you need to do is cite three instances where they've actually intentionally turned off the equipment. And specifically with respect to me, and that can I might be able to find that in different points in the past. What they will claim is that they are not required to keep the equipment on unless there's actually a meeting going. So if they recess the meeting in order to, let's say, arrest someone or shut someone up, then they claim they will instruct the cameras to turn off. And I think that does a disservice to the community, because if something is being disrupted at city council, it's important.
That's the freedom of the press. That's the First Amendment right there. You have a right to collect news, too. You have a right to collect news in a way that's constitutionally... There is no alternative, because they censor it. And that's why we have that in the First Amendment in the first place, to stop this kind of behavior. I think you're well within your rights, but I wouldn't trust those bozos in the local court. I would, or small claims.
And unfortunately, neither would I. Yeah, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, and we're in the last half hour, more or less, of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. Still nothing from Berkeley and what the protest is happening up there. Again, this is members of the religious community holding a meal and interfaith service in solidarity with homeless people. And the laws that the Berkeley is trying to pass or is sent to the city manager to make them operational and to activate them, involving things like unattended property on the sidewalk, sitting down in different places. It's a sort of a junior version of Santa Cruz's ordinance. So Santa Cruz has much harsher ordinances. They've been enforced for longer. It's interesting. Nobody knows. We were the first city in California to institute these laws. And that happened in 1994, the sitting ban. And as I've talked about in the year before, this was met with massive protests. I've gotten some occasional input from tenants together and a Santa Cruz tenant organization. And if any of those activists are listening, I invite them to call in with updates, similarly with Sin Baris activists, because I think they're doing a great job. That's a group that's a prison abolition group. And they're fighting for the abolition of prisons and more important, for the exposure and meaningful prison reform of what's going on here locally in our jail. You'll get a lot of Black Lives Matter stuff about, you know, the national scene, and you should, and I'm glad people are speaking up for that. But to name names here locally is something that we don't do, or that many of us don't do. I do it, and Huff does it. But you don't get it from groups come together with large numbers of people large numbers of organizations like the SCRAM Coalition, the Santa Cruz Coalition Against Militarism, SCRAM, Santa Cruzans Resisting Militarism, I believe it is. I've got the acronym a little wrong. The acronym's right, but my wording of it is wrong. They don't take it any further than this, the one issue of the Bearcat, and their response when they've been not only denied the real hearing on the Bearcat issue, because they didn't. There was nothing on the agenda other than an item in December on the consent agenda, which received very little meaningful discussion. And then there was an oral communications period. Essentially, Don Lane allowed a long series of ventings by members of the community without having any real discussion of should the Bearcat be have been applied for in the first place. That was never on the agenda. It even didn't even get put on the agenda by Micah Posner made a secondary resolution. And I'm still trying to... Some people are claiming that the activists had a victory that
so
night.
It changed the line.
And you're one of them, and I'm still.
Small victory. I mean, yeah, just a symbolic, because now he can't use it in parades. He can't just bring it to a protest unless.
Well, that was a part of the resolution that Vogel mentioned on January 14th. I don't know that it's any kind of victory. I mean,
December when they voted.
Well, that happened, that happened because because of the massive numbers of people who showed up at the two council meetings had nothing to do with the SCRAM organization that then began doing its little oral communications. People would come in, they would truck in, and they would do a number of, mm-hmm. Speeches, which got better. I mean, the speeches were very good. The speeches were very coherent, but they didn't elicit any response from the city council in any meaningful way. They didn't get an answer. Why was it? Why was the deadline delayed? Mm-hmm. Why did the police department apparently give misinformation about the deadline that they claimed that you had to buy it by December 30th, and there's no such claim. There's
no such
information.
Sleazy, but at least they didn't shoot you seven times in the back.
In the actual documents, so we weren't able to get that kind of discussion. All that Lane allowed was a long venting session that was actually all off topic. The only thing that was to be discussed on topic was, should there be accountability rules? And they didn't even pass any. I think they set up a committee to look into them.
Yeah, they installed them. Yeah.
And then the second thing that was the resolution was the police department's use of the Bearcat resolution, and that wasn't discussed either. I mean, the only discussion was, should we get this Bearcat or not? There was no discussion of how it should be used, which was the issue on the agenda. What that meant was Lane would not hold the community to a relevant discussion of what was on the agenda, because what was on the agenda was irrelevant to the community's concern. He had already made the decision, as had the council, to bend over for the police department and continued in that way. Worse, the activists in this coalition, good activists, have also bent over for this. There have been no new flyers issued by Food Not Bombs with pictures of the Bearcat come back and do this or that anywhere else. There's been no demands by the more militant organizations. The original impulse has been completely siphoned off and weakened turned into a mutual admiration society for activists to parade their different organizations. Whether it's they've talked about an initiative, but it's not anywhere like the it's not like the $5 to $8 signature initiative. Hang on there, Free. That is going to you're suggesting that the cannabis people are going to put out and actually do. Although I think a recall sounds like, based on what Mike Boyd has told, a recall might actually be a better idea than a referendum. A referendum, you only get 30 days.
It's even just pressure, the campaign contributors to the ones that are, I mean, like McPherson and another one that could be kind of...
My point was, though, that this dissipated the activist impulse.
Yes, because they sucked up the focus and then they
so
lost.
The issue for us at Huff is, what do we do next to reinstitute or reclaim and restore and reactivate? I guess that's the right word. There is the concerns about our police department and what it's doing, given the fact that there are exposures all over the country. Recently in San Jose, a guy was shot at a distance of 50 feet because he was wielding a knife. He wasn't wielding a knife against a person. He refused to drop his knife. Yeah. At least that's the story I was reading in the San Jose Mercury News. I got to look at it more carefully. Who knows? Maybe there was some more to it than that. But and of course there's this incredible video that finally surfaced in South Carolina. But what I noticed at the South Carolina situation was the next day when the video surfaced and you saw the guy got shot 8 times in the back or as he ran away, and then the medics didn't do anything to help him. The mayor went on about how there's a few bad apples, and, you know, and there's nothing about the conspiracy to cover this shit up about false police reports. And the point is, we have the problem here in Santa Cruz, which you can see, for example, through the selective ticketing of people downtown.
Right.
We saw with Officer Barnett and the ticketing of people of color downtown, where they're being ticketed 7 times their appearance in the population. And you also see it with the homeless ticketing. It's clearly evident. We're going to be actually looking at that tomorrow. I invite people to come down tomorrow to check out at the library. How people are actually, you know, you can hear their stories, but also I will be at the City Hall looking over the Parks and Rec citations. You can see one citation after another has a homeless address, gets a stay-away order, and also gets a ticket for being in a park after dark, sleeping, smoking.
Existence.
And it has nothing to do with public safety, public health. It is all about making this an unwelcoming place for a class of people.
Right.
And it's also an example of massive institutionalized police abuse, where the police includes the Rangers, Parks and Rec Rangers, and the police department.
That's right.
And, of course, these ordinances are an open invitation to that abuse. The ordinances, downtown ordinances, I'm just talking, not just talking about the sleeping ban and the park closure laws. I'm talking about the, you know, this incredibly detailed set of tripwires that people have to deal with to be downtown. And you might say, oh, well, look, these boxes, you were saying a moment ago yourself, DM, or should I call you Free, since I have already exposed who you are. You're a broadcaster on another show. You do a good job there.
Sometimes when I'm here.
Sometimes when you come in and do your show. You know, we have a situation where the police can, even if you try to follow their rules, they tighten them. They reinterpret them. They winch them up, and they do. And this is the whole procedure by which the laws have become tighter. They essentially have tailed on police activity that went beyond existing law, and so the city council moved to legalize what the police were doing. This happened in 1994, and then it happened in 2002, happened in 2003, happened in 2009, and it happened again in 2013 when the latest version were passed of the, you know,
and Barrasoni's the
laws.
City attorney all that time, correct?
Yes, I think so, since 1994.
We're
at least Barrasoni is gone. I did hear from activist Young Golder that he was given a farewell ceremony. I was invited to come to it, not by Barrasoni, but by Golder himself.
And he would have written these laws, or helped them write the laws.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's also written the laws destroying rent control for the De Anza renters and for the Clearview Court people. He's written the laws that restricting public assembly. At least his office has. Who knows? Maybe
Staffelese Esquire.
You know, but he's a responsible person. I don't know that his successor, Condotti, is going to be much better. But let's listen to a little music so that the people can stop listening to us and tap their feet.
I play the street fairs, I play from the heart, fiddleman, guitar, and squeeze box for art. We play for the old folks, we play for the bums, but we don't play for smokers, 'cause smokers are scum. Smokers are scum, smokers are scum. They know they're addicted, they know smoking's dumb. They know exposure is deadly to us, but they're hoping we're stupid and won't make a fuss. Smokers are addicts, they know smoking kills, but they're too friggin' lazy to smoke somewhere else. What's the big problem with walking away? I wish their smoking would kill them today. Smokers are fools, smokers are fools. They shill for tobacco like industry tools, making us share their addictions of ours. Take your stupid cigarette and shove it up your throat. Light up near me, because if you do, I've got a squirt gun and my aim is true. Folks think they're happy.
Carol Denny with another one from a Toast to the Union album, and that one was called Smokers Are Scum. Oh, we have a caller, perhaps a smoker, calling in. Never can tell. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with a bunch of us, particularly me.
All right. You got me with the last song about smoking.
Smokers are scum. Scum, do you hear?
Smokers are stupid.
Smokers are stupid, too? Stupid scum?
Smokers are stupid. Wasn't that the song, that the Carol Denny song you just played?
I think it's, well, in the album it is titled Smokers Are Scum, but I got to admit, Free was distracting me with his usual babble, so I couldn't tell exactly what...
It said nothing about vaping.
So, what's your thought there, caller?
I'm sure that Carol Denny's against vaping, too, because she has some sort of imaginary idea that a little puff on a cigarette or a joint or something is going to kill her or children or even the person who's using it, who in most cases is an adult and they can choose whether they're going to eat a candy bar or a sprig of broccoli.
So
who's stupid to say that we need to call a cop because someone lit up a cigarette? What kind of public resources are spent?
Wait a minute. I don't know. Did Carol Denny, I wasn't listening to the song. Did she say call a cop if you see someone smoking? I don't think she said that. She's not a fan of the police, I don't think.
All right. This is Carol Denny's position. As I understand, I did read an op-ed she wrote a couple years back. She wants to ban tobacco smoking inside any multi-unit apartment building. And because of a public health and safety concern. And that if a person violates that law, that they be evicted and become homeless. How stupid is that?
You know, what I think I want to do is I'll read you the lyrics, because that really is what we just heard. Smokers are scum. I play the street fairs. I play for my heart, fiddle and guitar, and squeeze box for art. We play for the old folks. We play for the bums. But we don't play for smokers, because smokers are scum. Smokers are scum. Smokers are scum. They know they're addicted. They know they're smoking. It's dumb. They know that exposure is deadly to us. I guess you disagree with that, Becky.
Okay, I disagree with, I mean, everything has a certain amount of risk.
Let me read the rest of it.
Eating fried food apparently has a huge amount of risk for health food.
I'm going to read the rest of this. But they're hoping... we're stupid and won't make a fuss. Smokers are addicts. They know smoking kills. They're too frigging lazy to smoke somewhere else. What's the big problem with walking away? I wish their smoking would kill them today. Smokers are fools.
I wish their smoking would kill them today.
Correct. Smokers are fools. Smokers are fools. They shill for tobacco like industry fools, making it share. Their addiction's a farce. Take your stupid cigarette and shove it up your arse. Don't light up near me, because if you do, I've got a squirt gun and my aim is true. Folks think they're helpless, but I say they're not. Pick up some bug spray. Give smokers a shot. Smokers are stupid.
Bug spray.
Smokers are stupid and ugly and dumb. Smokers expose you because they think it's fun. They won't smoke elsewhere because it's too tough. Smoking will kill them, but not fast enough. It gets in your clothing. It gets in your hair. Cause asthma. Cause cancer. Smokers don't care. The deep inconvenience of walking away, it's too hard for smokers. And that's why I say, pick up some bug spray, some air freshener, too. Don't let a smoker light up next to you. Their rights here have ended where your lungs begin. Pick up your squirt gun, and baby, you win. They'll poison your street gig. They'll poison your lungs. They won't put on patches or just chew some gum. They're screwed up and stupid and ugly and dumb. They'll poison their mothers because smokers are scum. Be glad it's just bug spray. Instead of a gun, they'll poison their mothers because smokers are scum. Your comments,
Pretty bad.
Becky.
Pretty bad. I mean, first off, she vilifies and demonizes smokers to the nth degree. She claims that they're shills for tobacco companies because they're customers for their product, and that because it is an addictive product. So in the same lyrics, he's admitting that they're smoking because they're addicted and it's hard to stop because of the addiction. But then she's saying, oh no, they're just shills for the tobacco companies because they buy the product. But she's actually a shill for the pharmaceutical companies who are with the patches and the gum, which, by the way, are as addictive as the nicotine vapors.
Becky, let me read you her final comment. She actually has a comment she writes after the lyrics that go with this this song and the CD. This was written Christmas morning 2009 after a particularly smoke-filled day. Gentle commentary on one of the obvious perils of street performing. Smokers are not scum. They are pawns in the tobacco industry's lucrative effort to addict and kill them. But smokers know what they are doing is deadly. Anybody who lights up near me at a twice cancer survivor, especially at a street fair full of kids, is scum. That's her feeling.
All right. Well, that didn't improve it any, in my view, other than she said, well, they're not scum.
Well, I think it's certainly inconsiderate.
Despite the title of her song.
It's inconsiderate to do it, I think, next to people who don't want smoke rumps. They're asthmatics who impacts and affects.
Let's go back to her. I'm a twice cancer survivor. Okay, she's had cancer twice, and she doesn't smoke herself, right? So it's unlikely that she got those cancers from her own personal smoking habits. Just an observation.
We don't know.
It doesn't mean anything.
Doc Mike here says we don't know that, and he is our doc in the studio. I'm sorry. You're going to have to. I don't know if I want to defer to his authority, but go ahead. Go ahead, Becky.
Oh, well, I'd love to have an intelligent conversation about the dangers of both firsthand smoking by smokers themselves and secondhand smoking. Those who are exposed to tobacco smoke, which is, by the way, very odoriferous and therefore easily detectable. As for asthma, we're finding asthma clusters are around major highways where air pollution from cars is highest. That's where you find asthma. Does Carol Denny refrain from driving a car or riding in a car? Or getting her organic fruits and vegetables in a truck that is transported
I catch your drift, Becky. I think the problem is if we're going to, if this is going to be a debate, we should have either Denny in the studio or something.
Dr. Mike, since he is in the studio, what is the relative toxicity of the same volume.
And what I'm saying, in case you don't get
car exhaust versus the same volume.
Yes, in case you don't catch my Becky, in case you don't catch my hint, I want to use the last 12 minutes of my show to actually put some homeless people on the air to talk about homeless issues. Okay, I think smoking, the right to smoke, is a homeless issue. I think debating Carol Denny is not at this particular point. So I'm going to leave it there. But you're invited if you want to invite her on the air to debate this issue with you. I suppose we could arrange for that kind of a time. Although it might be more like, I think it'd be more fruitful.
Well, I have a lot more to say. I'm sorry you don't have more air time in which for me to say it.
You can always
Robert.
Become a member of the Free Radio Collective if you'd like, Becky. The times have changed.
Yeah, that's ever happened.
Well, I think...
Well, I'm pretty sure you probably get in.
All right, so we'll talk more. And anything you want to say about any other subjects on this, other than this one song, Smoking is Scum?
Well, you did ask me to call in about the exciting announcement of the new 10-year plan homelessness.
Yeah.
Because the old 10-year plan to end homelessness is expiring.
Yes, yes. Give us the update. I know there was a special ceremony that Linda LeMaster and you went to, and I know it came up at City Council a few days before that. I actually spoke on that issue at Council, suggesting there's no decriminalization element in it. It's more bullying. Well, it's more poverty pimpery in my view. But what do you think?
According to Celia Espinoza, who's the head of the Department of Public Health at Santa Cruz County, and she said that there had been a 27% increase in homelessness in just 2 years. When I went and talked to Peter Connery, who's one of the people who puts together the homeless census and survey every 2 years, and I asked him what fueled that big jump in homelessness. And he said it was two factors. He says is the overall economy went bad, and presumably homeless people were the first fired. He didn't say that, but I know that to be a fact. And then he said the other thing was criminalization of homelessness, that actually fueled a rise in homelessness.
So again, the issue for those who heard Linda on this show is, you know, is there any point in going to these continuum of care meetings? Should this be some initiatives we should support? Should people, as Linda suggests, come in numbers to give homeless input to these things? To me, it sort of smacks of coming to city council and trying to get them to listen. But she seems to feel that, you know, this is a HUD funding thing, and it has...
It was a very self-congratulatory bunch who, first off, I didn't really see any homeless people there. Maybe there were two people there who might have been at some point in their life. And then their keynote speaker at the end was a woman who is currently homeless and in the Pajaro Valley shelter with her two children. And but aside from that, it was just all the big wigs.
Do people know what we're talking about, Becky? I'm wondering, remind us of what this plan is.
It was a press conference to announce the new 10-year plan to end homelessness, with apologies for the old one not working because of the big jump, the 27% jump in homelessness that they hadn't expected or anticipated. And they held it at the site in Aptos, which is some brand new affordable housing project with 40 units that just opened up, which they were showcasing as, centerpiece of their efforts, which houses 40 families. But she said that when they opened up the lottery, 500 families applied for those 40 units, indicating that there's a huge need and it's just a drop in the bucket. But and then Don Lane, Mayor Don Lane, got up and he said that he had heard that all of the heroes of Santa Cruz County were all in that clearing right at that moment. And they were all just like, oh, man, they were just about breaking their arms, patting themselves on the back for how holy and great and wonderful they are. It was wonderful. But we got free cappuccinos.
So, you know, in order to be perfectly fair to those who spend a great amount of time, a certain amount of time, following this whole process, you've been a homeless activist for several decades, Becky, and you've seen the continuum of care and plans to end homelessness. What's your general take on them, and is this new and different, and if so, in what way?
New and different, it is not. It is the same old, same old. It's more of a funding magnet for federal funds, but that seems to have resulted in more jobs for social service providers, and of the great unmet need, which they're actually fueling, in my view. Now, this didn't come up at the press conference at all, but homelessness is to a large degree fueled by our criminal justice system, which deems certain people to be criminals, and then they get cited and arrested and jailed and, you know, convicted or not convicted, in any way. This, all these social service and police agencies and court agencies and lawyers all get a big cut out of it, and it pads their paychecks. But at the end of the day, homeless people are still on the street, and now we have more of them than ever before.
So you're not a fan of these social services. What about the services? She always, I'm thinking back to a defender of the at least the social services that are provided, Linda LeMaster, a mutual friend of ours.
No, I'm not against. No, obviously counties need to provide social services. That's why you don't have more corpses that you're tripping over in the sidewalk, because we have things like food stamps and some of the health center things, and there are some food programs, that sort of thing, that are lifesavers for the people who are using them. Many of them.
What relation does this plan or the previous plan have to these social services? Does it have any? How much of a relationship is there? Do you know?
They're expanding and building on previous plans. They said that they were had learned from their mistakes, and so they were refining things, and they say that there's more of a national buy-in, that this is an issue that needs to be dealt with, and that they want to have, like, for instance, all homeless veterans housed by 2016. That was the first benchmark, and they have all these just benchmarks for these different projected classes, with I think homeless seniors next after that. And of course, the able-bodied men are still on the street under this plan right to the end.
You know, when I was coming back from Berkeley today, and I went up there to pick up Street Spirits, which, by the way, is now going to be available at the Sub Rosa Cafe for those who want to check it out at 703 Pacific, or pick it up from me or from a homeless vendor. I was listening to an old Bathrop Spears broadside show, which I was listening to John Stewart. You may remember John Stewart, an old activist around anti-psychiatry activist who was really concerned about the rights of psychiatric victims. And he was critiquing two books he'd read. One was called Rachel's Children, and the other was called America in Denial, books written in the 80s and 90s about homelessness. And he was very angry that one of the books described homelessness as fundamentally a problem because homeless people are essentially either mentally ill, they're alcoholics, or they are dual diagnosis types. And this is the reason that they're homeless. And he was just outraged. You know, he says, and of course, in effect, the reason they're homeless is they don't have housing, which is, of course, the position I've always believed to be the case.
The reason they don't have housing is because they don't have money to pay for the housing.
Right. Rents are escalating. Housing, you know, low-income housing being wiped out for condos and other buildings, and no funding is going into it. It seems like this, however, is becoming more of the dogma of the 21st century, the second decade of the 21st century, which, you know, it was floated then, although denied by a number of people who wrote books. The second book, Rachel's Children, he reviewed, was a very strong denunciation, exposing that homelessness is, you know, mainly, there's a large increase in the children were something like, you know, I don't know, 40% of the homeless or 40% of the families. I'm not sure. There was a large, significant number of children who make up the homeless population, to say that they're there because they're dual diagnosis. You know, they're there because they're alcoholics. I mean, it seems like what this is it's an attempt to, A, smear homeless so that they don't have to disempower them and treat them as objects that can